Podcast here with you again with another wonderful, another interview that this gentleman, we talked a little bit before we went on the air, and wait till you hear everything that he has done. And it's so impressive, and he's probably grinning right now and thinking, oh, my gosh, what is she saying about me? But I would like to welcome Chris Van Buren to the show. And he's in publishing, he's in online marketing, he's an author. Wait till you hear everything that he's written and what he's done. Welcome, Chris, tonight. How are you?
Thank you. Wonderful. Thank you for that intro.
Yes. Well, I do it differently for everybody. Okay, so we're going to get right into this. Now, you started off, you told me, as an author. But I have to ask you, what made you start writing? Were you a young boy, a young man? What prompted you to pick up that piece of paper and that pen or pencil and write?
Yeah. Well, as I think back, I guess I really started writing a lot as a teenager. I think it was kind of what I did to, move the sort of teenage experience through, and work with all the things that you do when you're a teenager, relationships and friendships and all those things. And I remember I actually wrote a lot of poetry back then. I wasn't really writing prose, like I did later. It was mostly just, word formations to feel. It was very feeling oriented. It's interesting, later, even recently, I'm sort of a fan and student of neuroscience, and one of my neuroscience mentors wrote a little piece about how poetry and particularly poetry, but also music, but poetry is one of the best ways that the human brain organizes information in the brain, right? If we write things out in poetry. So it causes a different neurological thing to happen. I found that so interesting and fascinating because I used to write poetry all the time. It was the only way that I expressed sort of creatively at that time. So I never really thought about being a writer at that time. I was just writing a lot. And when I went into college, I was actually planning to study something else. I was planning to be an art major and go into sort of the advertising profession is what I was hoping for. This is a long time ago. And I ended up switching majors halfway through and finishing college with an English major. And that's partially because it was easier for me. I kind of grew up in a family that my father was very much of an English sort of scholar. He always corrected our grammar, and he was very much about that. And so it was just natural for me to pick that up easily, and then kind of went from there, I suppose.
Did it bother you, though, that, he would critique everything you would say? I mean, was that tough on you?
Sometimes.
You all the time. Or did you maybe really like it, though, right?
Well, the correcting in the moment wasn't so bad. The difference between well and good and things like that, we would.
Exactly.
I mean, it was really something, and he would just correct everything in the moment, and until the point where we knew, most, the basic grammar. What was sometimes frustrating, he had a habit of saying, go look it up. He would not want to give us an answer to something and force us to look things up. And that sometimes didn't work.
Right. No, I don't want to really – just tell me, Dad. I don't want to go through all that. I don't want to look it up, right?
Right. And like for example,
set you for writing, though, because you learned the right way. Your sentence structure was done the right way, then I'm assuming.
Grammatic
mistake on anything. Not really. Not listening to you. Not at all. I think you, as a young man, I think you were on your journey. You started your journey then, and you knew what you were going to do. And some of us do, some of us don't. I was late in life when I started, and this all fell in my lap, really. I mean, I didn't know what I was going to do, but I think you knew maybe then, but maybe you didn't really know if what you were going to write would be worthy of somebody else reading it, right? I mean, did you have that in your head?
You know, honestly, no. Honestly, I was really mostly in those days writing for myself. I didn't really care if anybody else. I'm not sure I didn't care is the right way to say it, but I just wasn't thinking about whether anybody else was going to read it. I wasn't writing for that purpose. I was writing for myself. And,
right. And it didn't matter, probably, even if they did, because, it doesn't really matter.
It's not for you. Yeah, it was for me. And not that other people didn't read some of my work or poetry or things. A lot, my family and friends, I'm sure, did. And some people liked it, I'm sure. I remember some good feedback, but it wasn't really for that, and not at that time anyway. Later in my, when I actually became a writer for, career purpose, that shifted a little bit. Of course, it ended up being a little different because then it becomes your career, and then you do want to make sure, you do want to feel the feeling that, people are appreciating what you do. They like your work. It's a different sense, right?
Exactly. And I think, so moving along with that, so you started writing your own little stuff, and I'm assuming you went to college, correct? And when you were in high school, were you still writing then?
Yeah, I was writing in high school a lot of, as a teenager, a lot of this sort of poetic sort of work, and stream of consciousness kinds of stuff. And then in college, I did take a lot of English courses, although I was planning on having a different major. I then just graduated with English because I had so many courses and it was so much easier for me. And I had a lot of writing classes, and I also took a technical writing certificate program that was offered at my university. And it was a few extra classes in a certain area that would give you a tech writing certificate. And I just did that.
I see.
For,
okay.
Yeah, and so I learned it.
But you
I
see how
some,
the doors kept opening mm-hmm. for you. This is what I feel. You can call it synchronicity. I call it divine timing. The door opened for you. You stepped through, and it moved you a little closer to what you were really supposed to be doing all along. But we all have to go through the steps. You had to do these steps. You had to go to college. You had to take all these classes. And by saying this, I'm encouraging those who are listening who are maybe aspiring authors, maybe. But see, when they listen to somebody like you, they'll say, well, oh, God, I got to take all those classes. I don't want to do that. But
right.
Maybe you don't have to, but you did, Chris, because to attain what you have and what you've gotten to, all of that was necessary for you. That's how I believe. I believe that
And
if you look back and you're listening to me and you're thinking, yeah, she's right. When I think about everything that I've done and maybe some things you decided, well, I don't want to do that. I'm not going to take that class. For whatever reason, I don't like the professor. I don't like that, whatever. But you managed to get into the right classes and succeed. And so anybody that's listening out there who is trying to write and all of that, I mean, Chris started off with the basics. He started off just like you're starting off now. I'm talking to the listeners. So don't be discouraged. I'm not discouraged, and I can't even write.
I'll go a step farther. Yeah,
okay.
I'll go a step farther and say you definitely don't need that kind of classic training or anything like that. Not that my training was so classic, but I suppose a little bit of it was from my father, the grammatical part. But, there are some writers, some people are natural teachers, and it's really the teaching process. And other writers are natural visionaries. And others are natural translators. They literally translate between one group of people and another. So they're able to explain, like, for example, a technical topic. They're able to explain a technical topic to a non-technical people. That's a translator. So there are a lot of different sort of ways a writer, the source of what is the writing, expression. It could be the translator. Okay. It could be the teacher. It could be the visionary. There's a lot of different ones too, and those are just a few. So, yeah, the kind of training that goes with it is less important, I think, than the initial impulse.
Right. I think your father was instrumental in that. He might not have even known it, but he planted some really nice seeds, because I'm looking at your work right now, and I'm looking at what you've done, and we're going to talk about that, and it's very impressive. I mean, that's what I do, is interview authors. So,
yep.
I mean, mostly. I mean, I'm going to have, you know, a singer on, and I've got this other group coming on, but that's just an expansion on my end. That's what I do, but it's really funny how you get from here to here to here. And anybody who's successful, and I would consider you to be successful, had to start someplace. And I'd like to impress upon the listeners that, you know, just because you have something published, just because, doesn't mean your work isn't worthy, no matter what you do. And so let's go on with this. Now you started off as an author, and then you ventured into publishing and then marketing, or was it the other way around?
Well, actually, I started off as an editor. My first job out of college really was at a publishing company as an editor, because I had, you know, I had taken some of those courses and so on, and I kind of knew the technical writing side. And it was a technical publisher. This is back in the early days of computer publishing, when the personal computer industry was booming in the 80s. And so I started my career in computer books, and I started out as an editor. And then I for about a year, I guess, and then I was offered an opportunity to do some writing, also in the computer book business, and I quickly became a writer. and it was a teaching kind of writing, right? It wasn't as creative as all that. It was more explanatory, right. But I was able to do that. And so I wrote a lot of books, the writing experience. So I got a lot of sort of writing chops, if you will, from those experiences, because, you know, I output a lot of books, you know, and there's something that you learn when you're just by doing the writing process, right? Even if it's,
exactly,
you know, technical. Yeah. So that,
right,
that was quite an experience. Yeah.
Overcoming
writer's block, by the way, is one of those. Yeah.
So then what happened? How did you, from doing that, then where did you venture off to? I mean, it led you to something else, right?
It led me to, I got a job in the sort of documentation department of a software company for a while. That was very much like computer book writing. And I was writing computer books in my spare time on the side, because I still had those connections. But then eventually it led me to doing my own thing. I do have something of an entrepreneurial spirit. So I've always loved sort of doing my own things and writing my own books and having my own companies. And so I started my own publishing company. At the time it was computer related, because that's where I was, you know, that's what I was doing.
That was your field, yeah?
Yeah, it was my field. And
that was more instructional, right? That was more like kind of like, well, if you, for example, a simple example, if you want to do this, you have to do this, and you have to do this first. So it was more of an informational or instructional kind of computer books that you were doing? What were those about?
Yeah,
I love computers. That's why I'm asking you.
Yeah, mostly the computer books were very instructional. But when I started my own company, I actually did computer newsletters. Now, this is before the internet. So these are physical paper, published newsletters.
Oh, wow.
That we would mail out to people. And you know, people would pay for a subscription. Yeah, you remember.
Before Internet Explorer and Firefox, I tell everybody about that. I mean,
yeah,
I used to work for America Online, and all it was America Online, Internet Explorer, and you didn't really venture anywhere because there wasn't anywhere to venture. You know, America Online had a habit, and they did it on purpose, I feel. They kept you, I always said, you're in a box. They don't want you going off and looking up something else on IE, which is also Internet Explorer, which is now Edge. But
right.
They contained everything, and then it just blew up. The internet blew up. So what did you do when that happened? Because you were mailing all of these things. Did you see something changing, and you thought, oh, I got to get into this. This is that there's going to be blogs. Did you know about blogs? I knew about blogs back in the year 2000. My then webmaster said to me, Natalie, you're going to have to do a blog. And I said, what? What is that? And he said, well, you got to write every day in it. I said, what do you mean, like a diary? He said, informational stuff, what's going on in the world, in your own words. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, no, I don't think I can do that. I never really had to do that because he never did the blog set up for me. And then, of course, now I have my most awesome webmaster of about 9 years. And I have an editor in there, and I put pictures, and I have fun with it. I have people that contribute. But the internet really changed, and you saw it too, just like I did, because of the work you were doing. You knew you had to get on the internet and
right.
and explore that. So is that what you did? You just decided, oh, I got to be a part of this, or I'm going to be lost in the I'm going to be in the dust here, right?
Well, for me, yes and no. For me, because I was so close to the computer industry, I was very much a part of the computer industry. When the internet came around, I was right there on top of it. So it wasn't
right.
so
you
much like, oh my gosh, I've got. Yeah, it was like, of course I'm going to get on top of this because it's part of the next transition of computer technology. So it was for me, it was just another way of disseminating content. For me, the internet in the beginning, and it still is, an information packaging model. It's a way of packaging information, and I was all about packaging information. I did newsletters, I did books, I did other things. I did little software things, and so the internet came along. I'm like, well, there you go. There's another way to package information, and so I was definitely into it. And of course, at that time, early on, we didn't know what was going to take off and what wasn't. Do I need a web page? Should I do this? Should I do that? It was a little
bit
of a.
How are people going to find it? How do I get it out there? Exactly.
Yeah, and we all hoped, that it was going to be, this great equalizer. Anybody can access your web page from anywhere in the world, and nobody gets preference over anybody else's web page. You, the little person, in San Diego, where I was at the time, has just as much of a chance of being seen as somebody else. Well, that turned out not to be so true with the internet. But
right. True.
But
I can
all
attest to that.
Yeah, we all hoped that and saw that as a potential, and it was exciting. And then actually, it was actually shortly after that, about 1993, that I was offered an opportunity to become a literary agent. So that's when I made a transition from being an author and a publisher of the newsletters and all those kinds of things to being on the other side of the business, agent side. The agency
right.
that was my agency that represented me as an author offered me a job as an agent, and I took it. So for the next 8 years, I was a literary agent.
Okay.
Yeah,
do they still use that term now, literary agent, or do they call them PR people or publicists, or has that still stayed the same?
Yeah,
a literary
somewhat.
Agent?
The title and function. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a representative.
Exactly.
It's a talent representative. And it's changed a little because publishing has changed. Not as many publishers are looking for new authors.
Right.
So there aren't as many deals to be made. Right. So there aren't as many agents today as there used to be. Is what it comes down to. But there are some, and they still do the same function. Yeah.
Yeah, I've been noticing. I get everything from publicists and actual authors will write to me through Mystic Living Today, and I look at my email and I think, oh my gosh, look at all this talent! Look at all these people writing! It's unbelievable what I get. Hundreds and hundreds a day. Please, can I be in your magazine? Please, here's my excerpt. Here's my article. And some of them I have maintained a relationship with me, you know, for a really long time. I mean, the magazine has changed. But like I said, when I got Tony, he revised it for me and made it, you know, what it is today. We've freshened it up and stuff. But, and you know what? I have to tell you this because you're an author and you'll understand. When I do the magazine, it's always at the last day of the month. I mean, sometimes people will send me stuff like on the 1st or the 2nd, and I don't turn anybody down. I never do.
Yeah.
I change how I feel. I'm like in a different world. I am presenting, like say if it was you, I am presenting Chris to the world in my magazine. And, you know, it just makes me feel really empowered. I noticed that about myself. Whenever I work on the magazine, I'm not a Jekyll and a Hyde, but, you know, I become this other person that feels so good about what she does. Not that my other sites are not what I'm proud of, because I really am. I have people that work for me that are wonderful. But this is me doing this. I'm taking your work and putting it in there and making it look really nice, and then I put it out. You know, I put it everywhere I can think, each individual page or whatever it is. And so that's my end of it, is that, so I don't know what you would call me, but I really love doing that for people like yourself. It's like I'm getting all these feathers in my cap or something, or more little stars. And, you know, my online name is Stars Cast, Stars with a Z. And so I think what I do, if somebody sends me stuff and I put it, I mean, it's just with the utmost care and the best of my ability, and I make it look good. And I'm really proud of that. So I have to kind of toot.
You're like a curator. You're the curator, sort of. You're finding, collecting, and showcasing beautiful things you found. You know, beautiful things, right?
Yes. And it's so impressive. And all the people I've met all over the world. You know that?
Yeah.
10 years ago, I couldn't tell you that, but now I can. I mean, my magazine is full, and I get stuff all the time, and I rarely turn somebody down. Most of it is spiritual work, like, you know, oriented. I have a gentleman that wrote about the angels, and I'm going to have him on the show later on down the year. And things like that, and it's a way to present everything to all the people that are reading the magazine. And I really love it. So I'm bowing to you. I think that's so impressive. Okay, that's enough of that. We got to go on here. Okay, so you became a literary agent, and then you told me you found yourself writing again. Correct?
Yeah, I sort of turned a corner when I became a literary agent and sort of discovered the marketing side of the business. The publishing business. Not that I didn't do marketing as a publisher too, but it was a little different after I became a literary agent. In some ways, being a literary agent is like being a salesman. You are doing a certain kind of sales job, and I had never really done that before, and so it really did change my whole worldview in an interesting and good way. And that was around the time of the boom of the internet. So a lot of the things I was representing as an agent were internet, you know, internet related. I also was doing spiritual books. So the agency I worked for specialized in both of those things, spiritual books and computer books and computer technical topics. And I personally also did. And that's one of the reasons they offered me the job, is they said, hey, I was writing more in the computer side, but they knew I was interested in the spiritual side. And they said, well, we need an agent that can do both. And so that was the opening. And so I represented both, and that led to, you know, other forms of sort of the marketing side of the internet business and information, you know, information products business online. I moved into an internet company and did ad network kind of things, and sort of classic internet advertising. And then, long story short, ended up back sort of doing my own thing, and I was compelled to write again when I kind of discovered this topic. And I just realized that this is the topic I need to write about. This is the topic I need to return to being a writer about. And that's the noble spirit topic.
Now, were you always interested in spirituality? I mean, was that always in, kind of in the back of your mind, even though you did more of the text kind of stuff, the, you know, the it wasn't spiritual. Now, I think in a sense you were guided, but I want to know, when did you decide that, oh, wow, this is a whole other world I see here. This is a whole another avenue. I've been in it all my life. I didn't even know it, but as a little girl I was. And but how did this, I mean, how did you come to write all these, I guess they're not, well, they're books, but they are, it's like a series, correct? It's a whole series?
Yeah. A series of mini books, but yeah. I guess the real answer, I guess, is that it started. The 90s were my decade for inner work, and I could say that I was interested in certain things before that. I was an avid listener of the Nightingale Conant tape series before that. That was in the 80s. I wouldn't say those were exactly spiritual. They were mostly, you know, self-help. It would be called self-help. But it was really the 90s where I really dove into real spiritual stuff. And it was partially through relationships that I had that brought me there, challenged me there, opened doors for me there. The women in my life have done that quite a bit, I'd say.
So we can thank them.
Yes,
absolutely. Have to thank them, right?
Yes, absolutely. Just explorations. I wrote a little mini book back then. One of my first spiritual books. It was about emotions. It was called Being Emotionally Present. It was a little book where I was just expressing my what I was learning about emotional presence. And what that means.
And you published that yourself and marketed it yourself, right?
I did. As a publisher, I had a little publishing company that was a little spiritual book company. And that was back when, you know, the publishing was simpler back then. It was just, you either got into a distributor or you didn't. And there was a distributor that was specialized back then called New Leaf. They still exist today, but back then they were, you know, a big deal. If you got into New Leaf, you were distributed, you know, and in the spiritual, you know, areas. And so I got that into New Leaf, and it was a cool thing because I had the publishing, you know, background. So, and I had some poetry. I put some poetry into that book, and it was just an expression for me of this spiritual side. And that ended up growing and growing. As I did my own thing again after the marketing side of my career, when I came back to do my own business, it was marketing for spiritual, you know, coaches, trainers, authors, and so it was already a blend of those two things. And so then I sort of stumbled upon this noble spirit topic, and I thought I have to write about that. That's my topic. So there we are.
Well, look what it did for you, though. I mean, this whole series, doesn't matter how small it is, I'm going to tell the names of them. This is the first one, The Code of the Noble Spirit. Then you have the Your Inner Entrepreneur, Your Inner Artist, and Your Inner Healer. So you covered, you did the creative part, that's the artist. You did the healer part, okay. The entrepreneur is kind of like, okay, to me, that would be, okay, you might be new at this. Just to me, this is, you need to go out and you need to do it. I mean, I was an entrepreneur when I started everything that I did. I mean, I think when you do something, and it doesn't matter if there's thousands of the same or similar thing that you have, you're still an entrepreneur. But the Code of the Noble Spirit, that was your first one, correct? Now, why did you say the Code of the Noble Spirit? I mean, was there a reason that you called the series that? I mean, where'd that come from?
Yeah, it was...
I really ask good questions, don't I?
Yeah. thank you. It was the essence of the series in the beginning is to say, what is it? What is a noble spirit? In fact, it was through a neuroscience exercise that I was doing that I stumbled onto this. It was an exercise of it was a 7-day exercise to explore your deepest values every day for 7 days in a row. And so on the third day, I was just writing down things like, what are my values? And I like fairness, and I like, you know, this and that. And I would write down my values. And then at one point I stumbled on the nobility, like noble. And I thought, oh, noble spirit. And I just thought that, wow, that just captures everything for me. And so I started looking it up and saying, well, how do you define that? What are the definitions out there? And I found a few definitions. I found one that I really liked, but I thought, you know, how would I define it? You know, what does it mean to me? And it struck me that there is sort of something of a code. And it's not like my code that I'm giving in this book. It's really just a framework for everyone to build their own code, their own noble code.
Okay. What would you say is, what does code, people are probably saying, well, what does he mean by code?
Yeah, code is like a set of
your
values.
Your makeup? Yeah, go ahead. You explain it, because
yeah,
I have my
own
set
version, of values,
but,
really.
You know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's very value-driven. Who are you? What is meaningful to you? And there are some guidelines that, you know, I give a little bit of a framework, and then you define it for yourself. So it's basically, I wanted to get it down to the most essential values there are. And then would you define that for yourself? They're very open, kind of open concepts. Like, for example, always seek balance. Is one of the values, one of the codes. Well, what does that mean to you? That might mean something very different to you than it means to me within the topic of balance, right?
Right.
So I encourage people to explore what that means for you and define what that means for you. One of the definitions I found for noble spirit that I loved and I included in the codes is to have an absence of pettiness in words and actions. A noble spirit is defined as one without pettiness. And so I say, well, what does pettiness mean to you? What is petty to you? What does that mean to you? And how would you live with an absence of pettiness? And I loved that definition, and I thought, well, what else does it mean to me? So I came up with the four noble codes, the seeking balance, not having pettiness, never being desperate, and being generous. Those are the four noble codes.
Yeah, I wish we could all live up to that. I think that's probably what some of us lack. Balance is for me, and the only way I get real balance is if I'm so busy that I can't think. Because if I can think... If I can start thinking while I'm even at the computer inserting something, which I can do that, it kind of throws me off. I think that's why I love doing the magazine so much, because I'm doing it for like authors like yourself. I want it to be just the best that I have to showcase your work. And, you know, on my other site, I do a blog. I mean, I have somebody who does posts for me every day, and then another gal does two different kinds of cards. We do that, and then like I'll put you in there tomorrow, and that will be my own writing, and I'll list all the places that they can find you. And I like to be super busy. I don't know if that's good or if that's bad, but for me it's really good because it doesn't allow me to think too much or to fall into, like, you know, we all have things that bother us from time to time, children, whatever it is. And if we let that take over, then you're out of balance. To me, I'm out of whack. I mean, I can't,
yeah.
I can't
well,
do that. I mean,
actually,
I'm not married.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, what you're talking about is exactly the perfect kind of description or segue into what I talk about in the other books. It, in a way, underlying all of it is to calm your mind, right, and not be thinking in a way you say, I don't want to think too much.
Correct. Right.
But it's the same thing. And if you get there by overloading your mind, that's actually not uncommon. You're not the only one that does it that way, that can do it, that reach it that way. Other people reach it by calming the mind, and other people reach it. I mean, there's all kinds of techniques you could use. And if but the point is to get past the, you know, what they call the monkey mind, all those thoughts and chatter, and get to that soulful place, that inner voice,
that voice
of the soul. And that's what the rest of the Noble Spirit series is really all about. It's about calming the monkey mind so that you can hear the voice of your noble soul, and it speaks to you in these three ways that I defined. If you can listen to it through your inner entrepreneur lens or voice, through your inner artist, or through your inner healer. And these are just three ways of translating the information coming from your soul, in a sense.
Right, and it does work. I can attest to that. I work maybe 15 hours straight. I'll take time out to maybe have something for lunch, because usually I don't do a dinner kind of thing. I'll work straight through, putting everything in, and then I'm checking, making sure everything's lined up, and the links work. And, you know, the internet has been changed. You don't have to put www down now, and I have to make sure that if it's locked, that it's an HTTPS, which most sites are. And then I have to do that, because if I don't do it right, then it doesn't link right. So I'm clicking on everything, but I'm so busy with that. But I love it. I think I've found something that is really good for me. It's healthy for me, because I'm reading as I'm inserting this. I mean, because I don't have to type it, you know, and I'm a really good typist, but I read it, and I'm learning from each, you know, whatever they're sending to me, any submission, if it's an excerpt, whatever it is, I've learned about your book. I would like to put in the code of the Noble Spirit in my August issue, if you'll let me, because, and then I'll list the series that you have, because these are important things, and it's right in line with what I do with the magazine, and I think everybody could really benefit. And they're listening to you and thinking, hey, he's just a regular guy. Well, everybody's just a regular person. I mean, you don't sit on your throne or anything like that. I mean, DM, the producer that I deal with, you know, I'll say to her, well, you know, I guess I could talk to anybody. She says, you can. You could talk to anybody on the phone. She said, but a lot of people cannot, because they have to know the person. Well, I don't know you. I just met you before the show began. I just started talking to you. And it's funny, because I used to think that I had to talk to the author prior to the show time, you know, like maybe the day before. But I don't have to do that at all. All I need is the material, which I get, and all I need to do is to talk a little tiny bit like we did, and I'm good to go. So I have found something. Like I said, I could interview anybody. I don't care who it is. I could interview them. But when you find something, I think that's when you shine, don't you think? I mean, when you find something like I have found with the magazine and what it's, you know, brought me to, that's when you really do your best. But I do my very best when I'm doing it for people like you, not necessarily myself. It's just Natalie sitting here moving things around and reading and getting all of her information, even though she thinks maybe she's not, but I really am. I know I am. And it's strange how we change what we do. We walk down one path, and then pretty soon we get shoved over to another one. Look at what you've done. I mean, look at how you started. And not everybody starts that way, and I'm talking to my listeners. They really don't start like that. Although every author that I've had now, I have been very fortunate, but maybe I've touched with them. They came from a very educated background. They weren't just like somebody, you know, who worked in a factory and decided to write. That didn't work that way. Most of them, almost every one of them, is highly educated. Now, I don't know about this one gal that I'm going to be interviewing. I don't know how she got started. Well, I kind of have an idea, but mostly they start with I had some authors that their parents both had PhDs. Mm-hmm. Now, you didn't have that. What did your parents do? What did your father do?
My father did not have a PhD, but he was very scholarly. He worked for a division of Caltech called JPL, Jet Propulsion Laboratory. He was in.
Oh, well, there you go. See what his background was? And so, and we could use me in comparison. My father could fix any kind of machine. He was pulled into other places. I came from Detroit. He could fix anything. And he taught me so much. My mother was a leader in her own right. She was the first woman adjuster in the insurance company that she worked for. But she had no education, and her parents didn't either. Neither did my mother and my father's parents. So it doesn't always have to mean that you can say, well, oh, my parents didn't do this, and so, you know, I'm just going to be on a dead road. No, you're not. No, you're not. You know, if you have the desire and the need and the want and the dream and you believe, you can do it because anything
be
done.
Absolutely. And I'd say, you know, we were talking a little bit about my father's influence, but my mother's influence was equally as great, if not maybe greater. She's the artist in the family and extremely, extremely well read. She doesn't have a classic education, just up through high school, I suppose. She read everything and she had a huge vocabulary and really was a thinker, kind of very avant-garde, and an artist, you know, in a sort of artistic way. And so she had that artist sensibility.
Look at the genes you got.
Yeah.
Genetically speaking. And, you know what I'm saying? And maybe if you look back at your grandparents, and what I want the listeners to understand is that just because you don't have in your background people that could do this, and then, oh, yeah, my dad did this, my mother did that. I mean, my parents didn't do that. Look what I've got. Look what I've done. I don't even know how I did it. Well, I know how I did it. Mine was all pure guidance. Mine was all from spirit. Mine was all from God. If you believe in God, if you don't, it doesn't matter. Whatever you believe in, this was the path I was supposed to be on, whether I liked it or not. And it just happens that I really love what I do. But to the people listening, I mean, no matter what you do, do it well. And don't even look back to, genetically speaking, what the parents did, the grandparents, the great-grandparents, maybe one of them was super smart. Maybe you don't even know. But that doesn't mean that you're not intelligent enough to do what you want to do in life. I like to encourage people to do that because I have all these people on my show that are successful and have done this and this and this, and then the people that are listening are maybe, you know, the regular down-to-earth people, and, you know, wow, I could never do that. Who said you can't do it? Have you tried?
Yeah, well, and it's not just the parents' influences. I mean, maybe you didn't have great influences from parents, but it's the people around you and your relationships. I mean, influences come from everywhere. Like I mentioned earlier, I may have gotten some of my, English grammar from my father and art.
I'm sure you did
from my mother, but I got a lot of my spiritual context from. I said, the women in my life. So, whatever's sort of with you, and what you go through, really is sort of the school, your school of life.
That is, that's true. I read a lot as a little girl because I was an only child and I was home alone all the time because both my parents worked. But I read, sometimes the kids, my girlfriends wouldn't come get me. I'd see them walk by my house and I didn't miss a beat. I'm going to go read. And that's what I did. Or, you know what else I did, Chris, is I daydreamed a lot. I had my music playing. It was my headboard had a space for the radio. I'd have it on, and I found myself daydreaming a lot. So maybe that was some of my creativity. I don't even recall what I was daydreaming about, I think that helped me along the way, too. I think you have to expand. I think you have to let yourself touch on all of these things in your life. And even when you're really small, look back when you're really small, because that'll end up taking you to where you are today. And hopefully you have, like you said, relationships in your life. It could be friends. It could be somebody else's parents that were surrounding you when you were growing up, maybe not even your own parents. But you learn something from them. Sometimes it's just responsibility, whatever. But you take that all with you, I think. And then when you want to write something like you, you had that background. And we were talking about my fairy tale, you know, that I really didn't have that background, but now I just answered my question. I really did, Chris. I had it when I was daydreaming.
Mm.
I have that ability to work on things that are almost magical, that could this really happen? Yes, it could. Don't ever say it can't. Never say never. I had that said to me by my best girlfriend. Never say never. So we can look at my life as compared to yours. Look at the different way you got to where you are. And, I mean, I have three monitors all moving here, all doing stuff. And I didn't get teaching. I didn't get taught anything. The one first webmaster taught me how to do HTML. And I have to say that he did. I had to put the magazine up manually. What a drag that was. Then the one that I have now, Tony, and I have to give him a lot of recognition, he showed me a lot of things. And I said, well, gee, I said, Rob didn't do this with me. He said, because Rob wasn't too smart. He said, first of all, you're the owner. I want you to, you love to learn. He said, I can hear it in you. And you grasp real quick. And sometimes I think to myself, gee, I wish I was like 20, 30 years younger and doing what I'm doing today. But of course, Chris, you and I look back, we couldn't be doing that. It didn't exist. It was so different. It was just totally different. And so it's really, it's the influences in your life. You had some really great ones, a lot of intelligence, a lot of artistic guidance back then. And now, the noble spirit, what is the noble spirit? Is that just your spirituality? Is that the core of you? What is that? How do you define that? That's not on this media thing that I got either. That's just my, I'm just asking you my own questions because you're easy to talk to.
Okay.
So, and that's what I love about this. And I told Chris in the beginning, this is very informal. We're just going to, you know, let you talk and it works out really great, I think. But anyways, what is the noble spirit? What does that mean, actually? Is that the code?
Well, it's the, I mean, some people might call it, you can call it by different names. Some people might call it the higher self, your higher self.
Right.
Some people call it your soul.
Right.
I sometimes call it the soul self or the voice of the voice of your soul. Your inner guidance. I call it your inner guidance sometimes. I like the term higher self. I don't use it in my books so much. I tend to use the soul self or the noble soul. And the expression of that noble soul in your life is your spirit, is your noble spirit. So
you can't see it.
And not only that, it's within, but it's also sometimes very difficult to recognize those voices or that voice from all the other chatter that's in your head. It can be very challenging. There's a lot, especially now, today, where there's a lot of input and a lot, you know, bombarding your brain, and there's a lot of voices going on, you know. I'll give you a quick story as an example. It was a really great example for me of using the noble soul, the noble spirit work, and accessing my noble soul in a time. I was talking to a mentor coach of mine, and we were talking about finances and money, and he asked a question just point blank. Just at one point during the talk, he said, "So tell me, Chris, why is it important for you to, you know, make more money? You know, to achieve that? Why?" And let me tell you, when he first asked that. And I'm not sure I'm getting exactly how he asked, if I got those words exactly right, but basically that was the gist. He was asking me the why question. What is it from inside of you? Why does it matter to you inside, you know? And boy, did I have a million voices talking all at once to answer that question. And I realized wow, I don't even know how to answer this question. I can't even tell who's talking. There's so many answers coming up from me, from within my brain, right? And I thought, this is exactly when you need your noble soul, right? This is exactly when you need to practice listening to the voice of your noble soul. So I did a little practice that I teach in the books, right? And I thought, okay, I'm going to do this, you know? And I said, and I told him, I said, would you mind if I do a little practice to answer before I answer your question? He said, oh, of course, go ahead. So, and I told him about the three, I'm going to answer you from three different places, my inner entrepreneur, my inner artist, and my inner healer. But it's going to take a moment for me to calm my mind and access those three voices. So I did a little exercise, I calmed my mind, and I answered him from three different voices. And they were, each one of those three answers was so profound that I was shocked by it. I was like, wow, that, I mean, I just knew that that was the voice of my inner soul. It was so profound
right.
to me. So
right.
that's kind of what the process is, because it's not always easy to hear one voice or another voice, you know, to know, you know.
No, it's not. Not at all. Trust
yeah.
me, it's not.
yeah.
That's why, well, you know, I meditate every day, and it's a practice that I do. My cats are always with me, and I just, nothing is on, nothing is going. I just try to sit there and calm my mind and try not to think about anything in particular or anyone in particular. And if I do that, I actually go like into a level. You know what that is. You know, you're not really asleep, but you're there. Your surroundings, you know what's going on. It's the best time for me. Because then, and it doesn't take me long now, but then I sit up and my cat looks at me and thinks, well, what's she doing? Going to go get me food, I bet. No. Mom's got it together right now. Then I come back into my office and I'm good to go. Sometimes, because, you know, you can imagine I get pulled in so many directions because of what I have. It's not like, you know, I can sit at the computer and just do one thing. You know, I have receipts, I have clients, I have the magazine, I have articles coming in, I have people on Facebook trying to grab me. I have a question, how do I do this, or where do I go, and who can do this? And so I get pulled. So I have to periodically during the day pull myself away, and then I come back and I'm all fresh. But I think that meditation, that calming myself down, I guess that's what I do, distilling and being in the moment really helps me. That's probably what I should do when I want to write, is I should go do that. Then I don't go to the computer. I just take a pad and a pen and write. That's probably what I should do, because I'm in that space right at that moment in time. But, you know, I wouldn't be writing anything technical. Like I told you, mine is a fairy tale, and it's very magical, and it's for adults, but it's also for the younger children. I'm having my granddaughter, who's 14. She's giving me her input on it, because I wanna touch on them, you know, the young minds, because sometimes when you're older, oh yeah, this could never happen. How do you know it can't happen? Have you been through this? No, you don't, and you can tell I'm a real believer. And so I just probably answered my question. How can I sit down and do this? I probably have to do it right after I have that little bit of meditation. And I probably need your four books, because I'm looking here, and you have practices and exercises for the week with your inner artist. And an artist does not mean it's going to teach you how to draw. Your inner artist can mean is your creativity. It's going to show you your avenues. I'm telling you about your books. And I have not even read them yet.
The inner,
but you have,
that's a great,
which I love.
Yeah.
I love it.
That's
I really do.
Segue.
And I'm going to get all four, and I can get all of them, can't I? Yes, I can. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So
sure. That's...
you have the code of noble spirit, you have the inner entrepreneur, your inner artist, and your inner healer. Now, the next question, close probably to the last one, is what are you working on now?
Oh.
I caught you.
Yeah, nothing. Well, I run my business, which is.
But isn't it nice to do nothing? You don't have to always be working on something.
Yeah. No, I actually am always writing and doing stuff. I'm working in a little bit different. I always kind of come back to this Noble Spirit series and add things and prove things. I've done three versions of the Noble Code, the Code of the Noble Spirit. The second version was a fairly major change, and then the third one was just some minor tweaks. But I'm always sort of tweaking. So I'm always coming back to that. I always have other projects going too. I'm writing on in another field, technical, kind of a blend of technical and spiritual, to be honest. But something you said about the inner artist, I wanted to follow up on. It was a great segue for what is the inner artist? And you're right, it's not about art, and it's not even necessarily about creativity. It is, but what it's also really about is intimacy. It's our inner artist that knows what intimacy is. Now that may
right.
sound a little odd, but when you think about what an artist does, an artist looks at life and gets close to it so that the artist can then interpret it or draw it or paint it or
exactly.
sing about it
as they see it.
And
so, exactly.
And the closer you get to it, the more you can see. You know, one person may look at a leaf and see the veins of the leaf and the color of the green. Another may see the entire tree and how that one leaf fits in the tree. And you're going to see things differently. And so it's actually a creation of intimacy that you do in order to become an artist, to be able to explore that thing for your expression as an artist. So,
right. And beauty is in the eye of the beholder, and only the beholder sees that beauty. And that I write that all the time whenever I can, but that's exactly right, because we all see things differently, and even relationships, you see them differently. I mean, you could see a beautiful lady and think, wow, she's so gorgeous, I want to get to know her. And somebody, another friend will say, what do you see in her? There's nothing good about her. She's not beautiful. But you see her as beautiful. And then sometimes it's not even that exterior of that beauty. It's what's inside. And you just find the right person that, you know, somebody will say, well, what did they see in her? Why did you, what? I'm expressing it as if I was you. What do you see in her? Tell me. I want to know what you see in her. Well, it's what you don't see. It's how she is. It's her beauty inside. It's her balance, her love, her soul, what she's about. See, all that stuff is very important to me. And I think it's too bad I didn't get that as when I was younger. But I think we get things when we're supposed to. And but I want to impress upon the listeners about your books. They're not expensive, and they're not very big to read. But they will really help to develop you, each one of them in its own. I mean, you could just look at them and say, well, I really like this one. Well, then just get that one. I mean, it's not going to really, you know, one is more business intuition you've got. We talked about the inner artist, your inner healer. I like this, what you put here. Catch the trickster within who may be causing you to trip and lose your clarity of insight. That's important. That mm-hmm. is extremely important. Because you want
right.
to find what is steering you away from what you know to be right for you. There's something. It could be a person.
Yeah.
It could be something that you've read, a movie you saw, whatever. And I want to tell you something too, Chris. When we were talking, I think you should write a screenplay. I really do. I see you as venturing off into the movies. But it would be something very beautiful. It would not be a hodgepodge, because you have that ability. I can hear it in you. That's what you should try to think about doing. Maybe I just planted a little seed for you.
Okay, there you go. I'm intrigued.
See, I mean, have you ever thought about that? I mean, and actually, you could take your books that you've written and incorporate. I guess it's called a screenplay. Is that what you would call it? To go onto the screen, you have to write it first, and then it goes beyond. But you could take all these things. You could create a wonderful movie. A movie that is not junk. A movie that's going to show you the way of life and show you things that you may be missing and you really didn't realize. That's right, I can do that. I watch movies, and this is no joke, Chris, and if it touches me, I end up sobbing. I don't cry, I sob. My son has always told me that, Mother, you don't cry, you sob. If it touches me within like that, that's a great movie. That is the movie that will be very inspirational. So if you ever get doing that and somebody gets your stuff and you're famous, I want to hear from you. Because you can
definitely,
say, I have to blame this on Natalie. This is Natalie's fault. But yeah, I do. I think that's another avenue. You've had all the experience in all the other ones. You know the technical, you know the spiritual, you know how to write, you see? And you've. How about the movie called The Noble Soul? You could take anything that you have here. You really could.
When you
now I'm planting some
when
seeds.
When you said that. Yeah, you know, it's planted. I can tell because it's already sprouting. When you said it, I already got a movie came to my mind when you said that that I hadn't thought of in a while. Not that I would do something exactly like this, but I think this is kind of where it might go. Is the movie you may have heard of called Cloud Atlas, with Tom Hanks is in it and so on. It may be along the lines of what I might do. That's a very intriguing notion. Thank you for that.
You're welcome. My pleasure. It was a pleasure having you on the show. We're out of time now. Well, we're not. I extended it. But what a delightful person you are to talk. And, you know, before I talked to you, I thought, well, what am I going to talk to him about? Oh, gosh, did we stop talking at all? No. Not at all. And I have listeners on Facebook, and I know they're going to say, oh, my God, Natalie, that was great. Some of them critique me. Because when I first started doing interviews, I wasn't my old self. And there's one, and she knows who she is. She's going to catch me as soon as I get off the air. she told me that even last week she could see, she could hear a difference because this is me now. Before it was like I don't even know what I was. I was just taken aback by the loss of somebody so dear to me. I mean, she's on my one side as a tribute to her. And you know what's really funny is I always thought she was so knowledgeable, and she'd argue with me, not in a bad way. Natalie, you can talk about this. Talk. You'll see. And she always believed in me. It's kind of like champions. I have other champions. I have a gal named Jackie and Candy, and I have another site that they're all my stars, every one of them, and I have all of them, and I'm surrounded by beautiful people, and I'm so glad we met, and I'm so glad that Dia had the idea, how about interviewing him? And I'm looking at all this stuff, and I'm thinking, how am I going to talk to this man? He's done so much, but it was easy, and I love doing it, and maybe we'll have you back again. And let me know about this movie. Now, if you start writing something, I want to be aware of it, and all you got to do is call Dia, and she'll give you my own phone number, and you can call. But anyways, I'm glad that we got to do this. Much success to you. And don't forget, if you want to go to his site, let's not forget to mention that. It is Van Buren Publishing. And if you go to that, he's also on Facebook. If you go, I'm going to connect with you there. If you go to that and scroll down, you'll see the four books that we've been talking about, The Noble Soul, Noble Spirit, and it's just, they're beautiful, and they're small, and they're not going to be hard to read. And they're on Amazon, I take it, correct?
The Code of the Noble Spirit is on Amazon, yes. Not the other three, but the
first
one.
Not the other three.
Yes.
So you have to go to VanBurenPublishing.com, and if you just keep scrolling down, you'll find all of the four books that he's written. And I myself
or look in the menu.
Look
in the main menu. Yeah. Sorry?
Yes, in the main menu. I should back up so that I can direct people, because I had a little confusion. If I didn't have you on... If you go under Condensified Products at the top right, you'll see Noble Spirit Series, and that's what you click on, and you're going to get to all of them. He's got other things here. The site is beautiful. Did you do this yourself? You had somebody do it?
Yeah, I have a little team, a small team, but yeah, I'm pretty involved in it. Having been in computers for so long, I do have that advantage.
Yes. You know, I've always laughed. I tell Tony, my guy, I'll say, I want to point and click, Tony. Now, point and click. Now, that's how normal, no, I wouldn't call myself abnormal, but that's how people will go to sites. I had to explain to them, they don't see what we see and even what you see, Chris. They only see what they want to see. So they don't, you would think that they go venturing around. I look at everything. I click on everything. And if it's not working, I'm going to let you know. But that's what I always say to them. Point and click, I'm there. Point and click, I'm there. And I said, so it's got to be easy. And your site is beautiful. And you're a very nice man. I'm so happy I got to meet you. And I told Dia,
thank you.
I'm meeting so many people in California that if I ever get out there, we're going to have a little get-together so that we could all meet face-to-face and I can meet all the authors, because there's quite a few of you that I've been interviewing and that I will continue to interview. So have a great evening. Nice to meet you. And we'll talk again, I'm sure.
I hope so.
And this
Thank
is Natalie, also known as Stars Cast, closing out. Next week we are going to have... let me look at my little calendar. Her name is Marilyn Widd. We're going to have her. She's done some stuff on Baja out there for children. And then the following week we have Kaliani. She's a spiritualist musician. Wait till you hear her music. It's just magnificent. And it'll be same time, 8 o'clock, 8 to 9. And you'll see it on both sites, on starswithazpsychics.com and mysticlivingtoday.com. I have the little banner at the right. You'll see who's up next and the time and a reminder. And please join us next week. And as I always end, and you're going to love this, Chris, as I always end my shows, I always say, believe in things you cannot see, because they really are there. Good night.